If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
I have never lived in Adelaide, actually.
Are you serious? You went straight from Piri to Brisbane?
I went from straight from Piri to Ireland, to Canada, to England, to Brisbane, to America.
How often were you coming? Ah, sorry, we're in... Oh, I should start that. I already started that. That's great. You would have, as a Perry person, you come down to Adelaide for like what, a weekend or a
yeah, visit
day
the
shift?
Auntie, and then just do music stuff.
When did you leave Port Perry, Iron Cancer Capital of Australia?
When I was 18 years old.
Yes, okay, you were there for a while, and then, man, that's great. So wait, you did the missionary program in Ireland?
I was just babysitting for my brother. And going
well,
on an
had
adventure.
Done a missionary program in Ireland.
And then I did one missionary program in Canada.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not across this missionary program.
Okay.
Like I don't understand. I never, I came quite late to the Catholicism.
Okay.
So when, what is it? Where do they send you?
Basically, when you were at school, did you ever have people come and run retreats for you?
Nah. No. Public school. Where did you, were you at a Catholic school in Perry?
I was at a Catholic school, yeah. So essentially young people traveling to schools, because I don't know, when I went to a Catholic school, the Catholic faith was taught very poorly to me, mostly because the people teaching it weren't actually
Catholic.
Were
they talking it down? Were they?
Yeah, I was
a lot
taught.
Of side eye?
I was taught like sex positions in my PE class.
Well, I think that's true of a lot of people, but was that part of the formal education?
It couldn't have been.
And that's crazy.
I remember my religion teacher was an atheist. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I had that, but I was at a very secular school. I was at a school that made a point of being secular.
At least there's integrity there.
You know, I think about this all the time. How old are your kids now?
2.5 and 8 months.
Okay, so you have a couple years to have to make a hard call. But it is nightmarish to decide where to send them.
Agree.
Yeah. No one that I can think of off the top of my head, but not a lot of people who went to Catholic schools come out practicing Catholic.
Agree.
Because it is often, you know, fake and gay. The way that it's set up. It's run by people who don't care about it. The diocese, the days of nuns and brothers are long gone, at least in most places. And then you go, well, okay, I'll say this for the state school, they're so scared of like being in trouble that the woke thing is for them to go, you know, everybody's faith is beautiful and important, which is closer than I think being in the Catholic thing and them actively going, this is dumb, don't pay attention. So I don't mind too much the state thing. We'll see how it turns out. I could be wrong.
How old is your oldest?
7.
Okay.
7.
Does he or she kind of grasp Catholicism?
As a girl, and yes, really well catechized little girl. I think the Latin Mass thing. Hello, Aiden! I think the Latin Mass... yeah, the Latin Mass community is... there are lots of children, and they have good... I'm very impressed by the systems that they have in place.
Yeah, awesome.
And also, I think... I don't know, there's something... Oh, I could talk about it for days and years. I don't know. I find it easier than. It's sort of like an ethnos to be Catholic. Something about the Protestant thing is like maybe it's the leap of faith stuff rather than being like a people, but like a lot more of it seems like performative. And if you're Catholic, you can't really get out. There's a James Joyce line where someone asks him, like, when did you stop being Catholic? And he goes, that's kind of for the church to say,
right?
Not me. But there's like, you know, I'll talk to people who go, yeah, I'm Catholic. And you go, when's the last time you went to mass or whatever? And they go, oh, 15 years ago. But they still, they feel very much that's who they are.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Whereas not true for a lot of Protestants who will be very ashamed to talk about what and who they are, but might go to Bible study several times a week, but don't want to seem like a loser, right. Churchy loser. Anyway, that's I picked that up.
Yeah, man.
But you really did it. I mean, you really. So this is instead of a gap year, you finished school, and then
I actually left school halfway through year 12.
Okay, you didn't finish?
Kind of accidentally. I went for a job at a bookshop, and I at the interview they were like, "Oh, we're looking for someone full time," and I went and told mom, and she was like, "Well, we can talk to dad." And I was like, what? I'll leave year 12. I hate school.
You were done?
Yeah.
Where was the bookshop?
Just Port Pirie, Main Street.
Nice. Bookshop. Nice.
Yep. So I did that. And then after that, 2 years after that, I did like the gap year on my mission year in Canada.
Where in Canada?
Yeah. First year was in Wetaskiwin, Alberta, which is close to Edmonton. And then the second year was traveling all across doing music ministry.
Help me understand going on mission to a country that nominally has a big Catholic presence. Because when I think of going on mission, mm-hmm. I think of Mormons turning up in Uganda.
You totally. Well, I think you just put your finger on it when you said a lot of people identify as Catholic, but they haven't gone to church in 15 years.
Yeah.
A lot of kids in Catholic schools are taught this is what Catholic is, but they actually don't meet Jesus, the person. They're not taught how to pray. They're taught like, this is what you should and shouldn't do, but they're not taught like why Jesus cares about you and what he's done and what he wants to do in your life kind of thing. So I think the vision was.
Yeah. I think there's a low bar for. And so, hey, Samantha. Oh, is there food time? It's going to be too hot. We'll go in a bit. We'll have some food. To what extent is a rich interior life, how do I do this in the most charitable way possible? Socrates, as written by Plato, talks about philosophers. And here I think he's not using as loaded a term. It's like just loving knowledge and having like an interior monologue. And I know like some people don't. When I think about what prayer is, rote prayer, community prayer, but also like a personal prayer that is very similar to like an elevated interior monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm told some people just don't have that.
As in they don't do it? Like they don't personally pray? Or
I'm saying that they in their head there are no words.
Like they'll sit to pray and nothing will happen? Or
I think I'm saying as they're going about their lives, they're not habituated to thinking in a constant running stream of words in their head. Like in The Simpsons, I don't know if you're a big Simpsons watcher.
I wasn't, but I feel like I should be now.
Have you caught up on The Simpsons?
I haven't.
I know two women from the Piri region, and neither of them watch The Simpsons.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's just...
I was a South Park girl.
And that's even...
Worse.
Odder. But how old are you?
I'm 36.
No, we're the same age. This doesn't make any sense. It was on every night on Channel 10 at 7 o'clock. Did the family have a rule? Like, that's not going on?
I feel like I remember it being on the background, but I wasn't like, you know, religiously watching it. But I know I would find it funny now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find that so funny. It was such a formative... Even with at the time, I think there were only four channels and no internet access, and yet still people were having very different lives. I like to think that something different was happening in Perry. But in The Simpsons, where they would like pan up to people's heads and they'd be thinking in a series of words. But to take that, what I'm trying to say about the prayer is like, Catholics tend to do a lot of rote prayer compared to other people. Maybe not the Orthodox, but certainly like in the Protestant thing, it's very...
feely.
Goodness me, someone's saying grace and they're just riffing for, you know, for however long and really getting into it. And we don't, I think, there are many things about Catholicism that feel like sort of folk religion-y things to me or like less, I don't know, not sophisticated, but like requiring less of the individual struggle. Mm-hmm. And like just in a normal parish, there's definitely less on. Like personal encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Even I've heard people, Buck back against that. when I've spoken about that, and people going, you know, well, where does it say, you know, you have the sacraments, what do you need? Yeah. What are you talking about? What is this personal encounter? This is Protestant stuff.
And what do you think? Do you think it's better to have rote prayers and more structure, or are you saying that?
I don't know. I would say, as we've moved into having a fourth child, I have lost my interior monologue, and I don't think anymore. And when I do pray in a contemplative sense, it'll be something like, God, help me, God, over and over again.
I know that's funny, but that's also really beautiful.
Sure. I mean, I try and expand that out to the Jesus prayer where I can.
Yeah. That's awesome. And that's what it is right now. I think that's sweet.
Yes. But I'm saying, like, I am elevated by the rote prayer.
Right.
Like, there's nothing, like, the Hail Mary is more complicated than any of my thoughts would be. I'm being brought up. It's not that I've come down to that,
right?
And the open riffing prayer, but certainly I think, I guess I hadn't been open enough to other people having that in their life. That people's life, they don't have a lot of sitting and thinking time, and they don't necessarily celebrate where they can. But is that what you? What does one do? I mean, say you're in Ireland or you're in Canada, and you're talking to the kids. When we're talking about encounter, what do we mean by that?
It means like an unmediated. Like connection between you and Jesus. So like you're sitting down and you're telling God everything you want to tell him, maybe what you want. You can tell him what you think of him, but then also having time to like be silent and listen and let God talk to you.
Yes.
And that could literally just be sitting in silence. It could be reading the Gospels, seeing, you know, what Jesus does, how he speaks, how he treats people. How does that relate to me?
This unmediated point is, I think, an interesting one, because I think what a lot of the trads get their back up about is that it's the temptation is to turn God into what you want God to be, and that you need to have something uncomfortable strapped to your thigh, you know what I mean? So that you really get the picture that this isn't coming from you, it's happening to you.
Right.
Or something. But I've always felt comfortable with... I guess we would say like conscience, the Aboriginal Vicar of Christ, which is like feeling like one can hear God, being able to hear God, and I guess I see that as, I don't think of that as being difficult for me. Like has been at various times, or I've not wanted to do it, but that, I think as a child, I always found that very natural and straightforward.
Yeah, cool.
But I understand that some people maybe don't. I don't know. Do you remember praying as a child?
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it.
Was it like rote prayer, or just would you take yourself to that place?
As a child, it was kind of all forced. It was like, go to Mass because Mum wants you to pray grace. Like it was never kind of my own choice, my own time. I didn't really start praying until I was like 18, I guess.
That's so interesting. I don't think anyone was encouraging me to pray. We were Unitarian eventually, but we were an atheist.
Right.
Agnostic household. Yes, I don't know why I found that. Straightforward. I got off the track. It's been a long... You've come here at a strange time.
I know. You've been great.
No, we meant to do this podcast, I think, maybe two years ago, and you moved to... Since we had that conversation, you have both moved to and away from Steubenville, Ohio.
Yeah, you've moved to Australia. And
I've also done that.
Minnesota. Yeah.
Well, you're in Minnesota now.
Yep.
How long were you in Steub for, and where were you? I've got the layout in my mind. It's burnt in.
2 years.
Wow.
We were directly across the road from where the Spanish Sisters are on Lover's Lane.
Okay. You're in the... Well, this is in the downtown. No,
it's
uptown.
It was closer to Wintersville.
Okay, yeah. Not as far as the Chase Bank.
Further, maybe.
If I'm going from the downtown up the highway, help me. I'm past the McDonald's.
You want to take a left at the fire station?
Yes.
Past Lowe's.
Ah.
Yeah.
Very good. Very proximate to the Walmart.
Yep. Walmart is close.
Had that pothole gotten taken care of?
No, and there's like a million of them.
There was a car park. It's horrible. There was like a noticeable one. Did you get to go? When I got there, they were about to open a video game arcade that I assumed.
That is open.
How was that?
I went there with my nephew and my brother Matt, and it was the most overwhelming experience of my life. I actually wrote a song about it.
Okay. Well, what album is that? Is that out yet?
The song's called Stealing Pie. It's on my last album. It was just so loud. Like, yeah. I usually sit down and like shoot zombies. Just so incredibly loud. I could not sit there and do it. And I was like, kids have different ears these days or what? It's crazy.
We've become sensitive as we age. I wanted to go. I did a gig in Pittsburgh, and for the New Polity Conference, I got to stay with Mark, and it just happened on the same weekend. So I stayed in Steubenville again, and I hadn't seen it for about 2 years.
Right.
And it was everything that they're involved with, everything that whatever that thrust is, because it's not just the magazine, it's like the whole Catholic renewal thing is like, it gets better every time I see it. And, awesome. But the host body continues to die.
Yes.
And it's like that mall, I was told like that mall's going to be condemned. I didn't get to go and see it this time. But, you know, like little shops that were still going, some of them have closed down. Little, like, it's this odd thing of the renewal. I guess you get to a, at a certain point, things that survive come with you and are improved around you and by you. But at this point, things continue to be born and things continue dying simultaneously.
Right.
And so in some sense, like I look at it and I think of how it must have looked 5 years ago, 10 years ago, where I could see an exterior sense of stasis. But really, I think is that renewal is like a seed growing. It's like, it feels like the same number of things are happening there, but the things that are happening there are much better now.
Mm.
Like the grocery box when I got there was a quarter of a room, and like it's expanded, and so you know Mark was trying to get his meat license, so he was allowed to have meat, and now it's a whole big beautiful thing. But it's also like I have a sense of what they're doing there is heroic,
mm-hmm.
but also like sad. It's like how. It's like people aren't all like springing up and waking up around and going like, yeah, we're on this. We're doing this. We're, you know, there are, I would just like to see other people from outside of that springing up and get like landing a hand. And maybe, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are in all sorts of ways. But it's like, you know, good. Okay. They built the college.
Yep.
Sorry. I could ramble forever. They built the college and they incredible, and the college is growing over there and over here, and they're getting this building, and then like also the school has this big hideous new STEM thing of like modern architecture, so it's like all this beautification of the other stuff, and then also here's this like spaceship plonked down next to Naples House, which thank God still holds on. Did you ever eat at Naples House?
No.
Never?
No. I just refuse to go out to eat or drink in Steubenville. I've just No.
Mexican place kept going? The Mexican place? You never went to the Greek place?
No. David did. I didn't.
I loved the
Greek place. Mexican place. Mexican place was the fourth street.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Bit expensive, but good. Yeah.
It was too expensive.
Food is so expensive in America.
I was very impressed that they were. Well, it didn't used to be.
No
thanks,
joke.
Thanks, Obama.
Rice crackers here, 90 cents. The Woolies brand is good enough. Rice crackers
we
there.
We spend a lot of money and time $7. And effort getting behind our own rice crackers. We're in the Sunraysia district. What else? I mean,
you ready for the advertisement? Here we go. You know, do you know those pieces in your closet that you find yourself wearing on repeat? The sweater that goes with everything, the perfect pair of pants, etc., etc. Well, Quince focuses on high-quality wardrobe staples. Now, why you did a staple for the wardrobe is absolutely beyond me. That's more of a piece of paper type thing. They've got 100% Mongolian cashmere. Presumably, that's an important kind of cashmere. Organic cotton. But what is organic? Ah! And merino wool. Ah, it's a fine wool. The styles are timeless. Versatile, designed to become the dependable pieces you reach for day after day. Everything at Quince is priced to 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories whose ethics I don't know. What's happening out there? Someone's walking around out there. Might be next door.
Hello?
Oh, it's a little spooky being out in the caravan. Oh, there we go. Probably just next door. Okay, let's do the... what's the quintessential item you find yourself wearing on repeat? I have their sheets. Every night. I mean, Quint's sheets. What makes it a staple in your wardrobe? It's sheets. Find your next four favorites at Quince. Download the Quince app for exclusive offers or go to quince.com/catamaran. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/catamaran. I use this and you should too. Well, there we have it.
It was so, like, I spent so much time in the, it was a bizarre life. I assume you had a similar thing.
Right.
Where it's like, young children, Appalachia, what are we doing? What's happening in our life? And just like scenes from that town are burnt into the back of my mind. The people at the Goodwill, there was like a Lucky Dip store that I only saw once. I mean, I was only there for 3 months. You were there for 2 years.
That's right.
But what's the craziest thing you saw? I mean, this is your first time living in America, was going to Steubenville? Or you'd been there before?
I had been to America before, not in Steubenville. It's the first time I lived in America.
Yeah.
I can't think of one thing, probably a combination of a bunch of things. Like just going to Walmart and people that work there are like in their pajamas and, you know. Oh, it is the craziest thing.
Yeah.
When I got my ultrasound for my second baby, the woman was playing like death metal.
Okay.
While she was like trying to find the heartbeat and Dave was just like, this isn't right. No. That was pretty wild.
Oh, man.
But
we were in Texas when my wife got pregnant and we went to a place that was like the only place that we could get into for free. Like you can, they have all these odd little ways of getting free healthcare.
Yeah, right.
We didn't have insurance, but it was also like abortion is now illegal in Texas, but just every sign possible that if you asked, they would get you a bus ticket.
Man.
To wherever you needed to go. Or
wild.
Like, but also like, but they're doing all that stuff and they're doing all the, oh, this is wonderful. But they ask at the, like, and what are you, and are we, you know, they're just sounding you out. Are you, are we happy about having this ultrasound today?
What do you say to that? Yes.
I think I disassociated. Honestly, I think I just stopped paying attention.
God help me.
Did you get to go to the Social Security building in Steubenville? It's in one of the few office towers.
I think so.
Have.
I think so once at the start.
I found that to be a really beautiful experience as I was getting my Social Security card. Also, the office, where the Pints office used to be in this big building with the bank down the bottom, that bank closed down just before I got there.
Right. I never knew it was open recently.
I believe it had been open. I think I'm getting that right. Did you see things closing down while you were there?
No, everything was already closed down.
it's just also you went from there. I mean, you've never lived in a warm place in America?
No.
Have you thought about it?
I want to. I really don't like the snow, especially with kids. It's so hard to not be outside every day. But we'll see how this winter goes in Minnesota. The summer has been great.
Where are you in Minnesota?
Mankato. It's like,
I don't know a lot about Mankato.
Hour and a half south of the cities.
Okay.
Yep.
The Sun Belt of Minnesota. Moving back to Adelaide was a... It's hard coming back to Australia after living in America, if only because there's an optimism that Americans tend to have, I think, everywhere.
And the opposite is also true.
What, that we suck?
Yeah, everything here sucks.
Well, we're down. How are you finding the music? I mean, the fact you're getting to do any music at all is astonishing to me.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky that heaps good friends have a fan base here that we can just like do a gig here.
Tour?
No, just one gig. But the fact we did a gig on the weekend after like, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years of doing a gig and we had like 150 people, which was sweet.
Sick.
Yeah.
That's so nice. Where did you do it?
Yeah. at Jive.
You got to do Jive?
Yeah.
Tam won't respond to my calls.
Come on, Tam. How come?
Do you know Tam?
Nick knows Tam better.
All right. I have a word. I used to do comedy shows there during COVID when there was no dancing. And she, happy to say this, did not like the guy that I was doing the shows with, who I was like bringing.
And wrote you off because of it.
I don't know. She's an interesting person. But maybe it is the greatest venue just about that I've ever played.
I love the shape of it, the upstairs.
The upstairs. Yeah. It was built as a comedy club.
Someone
told me that, and it was a comedy club for years.
Maybe we shouldn't write Tam off.
I'm not writing Tam off. I'm begging Tam to get in touch. No, that's great. You got to do Jive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, I'm very jealous. my biggest ever comedy clip that I put on the internet was from...
Oh, dope.
I recorded Jive. Yeah, it was all through COVID. We were allowed to go there and do it. Ah, love Jive. Is it just the Adelaide show? Are you going anywhere else?
Yeah. We would love to, but we just didn't plan it this time.
No, I understand. How often are you getting a... I mean, you've had a gypsy lifestyle. Let me figure that. You were in Brisbane.
Yeah.
Then Steubenville, then Minnesota. Yeah. You're still in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Traveling around now. And your brother, which this is a podcast for you, but I'm just... when I try and chart the trajectory of the last 3 years, if I'm to map my trajectory onto it, it's also...
Yeah, right.
I worry now about moving around with the kids.
Do you mean... Oh, like just if they will get disoriented, new friends.
They do get disoriented for sure. But like there's like an age at which they're at a certain house, and they get over it and whatever. But like it's a sad thing of my 3 year old being like, when are we going back home? And I go, this is our home now. But when are we going back to the Blue House in Austin? It's like, I mean, even if we went back, we would never be in that house.
Yeah,
and we wouldn't want to be. It's really, we're in the arts. It's unstable. Through being a Catholic, one has children before one is materially necessarily in exactly the position one wants to be to provide for them. My buddy just had a kid this weekend but they're in their mid-30s and the difference, he has a proper job and they've had a proper job for a while.
Right.
And it's like, oh, this doesn't look like when I, when we had our kid.
Yeah.
They've got the room set up. They own the house,
Just more opportunities to say, God help me.
God, sure. Absolutely. But yeah, it's that odd thing. We're called, okay, Holy Spirit and Pilgrim Church and God put me where you want me. And then also just like genuinely like, gee, I'd like to be providing something stable for my family.
100%.
And if it was for me, it would be easy to give that up. And I think this is why it's a good thing to have priests without families, because God can move you around and do things to you in a way that I sense that he might not want for my kids. And maybe, I don't know.
Right.
I'm getting radio silence on this, on like long-term psychological impact of moving a lot. I feel weird about it. I do.
Do you intend to move? You don't have to answer this.
No, I genuinely don't know. I look up houses all the time. We're making this movie here. I'm enjoying making the movie here. My fear is that I make a crappy movie and people go, you tried to do a second thing. How nice. Back you go to the only thing that you're going to be able to do. Like how greedy to insist that I be able to do a second thing that would better suit the schedule for my family. But I think if it was just comedy, I've tried to do it in Australia. Mm-hmm. And we have 5 towns. And that's not quite enough.
Totally. And even the amount of people in those towns. Like I've seen... Okay, I have a question for you. I've always wanted to ask comedians.
Hit me.
As I follow some comedians. You know Jeff Dye?
I do know Jeff Dye. Yeah,
I love Jeff Dye mostly because he's a huge wrestling fan.
I actually know Jeff Dye, personally.
That's awesome. I've noticed this on his, but on all the comedians' tours, obviously like a show sells out, you add a second show.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like 3 or 4 shows in the same town. Yes. Why don't you just get a bigger venue and do one show? Is it because of how intimate it is in a smaller setting and that's way better?
It's entirely a financial decision.
Hmm.
Oh, I'd love to. Oh, if we can, if you're interested, I'll tell you.
Tell me.
Comedy clubs operate in America on a strange model. In Australia, almost always when I play a venue, there'll be like a set split. say it's like 80-20.
Yep.
In America, what there will be like four levels to the deal. So it'll be you get a guarantee of $200.
Okay.
Something pitiful. But if it sells over 50%, we'll give you 60% of that. And if it sells up to 70%, we'll give you 65%. If it sells 100%, you get 80% of all door sales.
Great.
So like it's significantly you are rewarded for the difference between you can sell twice the number of tickets and make 15 times the amount of money.
Wild.
So you, which is not quite that one is being rewarded for selling out. One is truly being punished for not selling out. If you, if you don't sell out, you're punished. And then the deals you get on the second, adding a second show will be like, and you can keep 100% of the second show.
We'll just take the bar. Okay.
Because the money for a comedy club, I suspect this is similar to music, but it is in the chicken tendies and and the beers, and that they have to have a lot of staff on with table service.
Yeah.
So.
But I've always thought about the performer, like that's like three more nights of accommodation, all the food they have to have in a foreign city. I don't know.
Can you hear that, Ethan? That's my manager, Ethan, I'm speaking to.
Come on, Ethan.
That's why we want to move into theatres, Ethan, so that I can live longer. It's genuinely difficult, and moving up into theatre, the deals you get at the comedy club are much better. So if you were to sell the same number of tickets, you know, say the combined number of tickets at a comedy club versus that number of tickets for one night in a theatre, even though you have to work three times as hard and do three shows, often the shows are better in a comedy club because it's built for it, but you might make a really substantial amount of money that's more. And so that's, of course, what everybody, you know, is
it's
after.
All about
the
money.
Risk is lower, the reward is higher, and the only difference is that you have to do something unpleasant, which is being in, you know, a strange bed in a bad hotel for another couple of days.
Right.
Away from the family. Now, most stand-up comedians either don't have a family or the family blows up because, I mean, it's not a good industry.
Yes, yeah.
For that, because you're away for so long and, anyway, it's taxing. So I'm trying to move into theaters.
That's awesome.
Well,
thanks for explaining that. That's so interesting. Oh,
I talk about it till the cows come home. I am fascinated as to how it works with music and what, like, because what I find for a lot of bands, and the archetypal story around having a band is people get famous and they do a bunch of shows and no one in the band is actually necessarily across how many tickets are being sold or the merch or whatever. And then at the end of it, someone goes, you made $100. And they go, what do you mean? Right. Like this is every movie has this twist moment. Do you understand the finances of when you have a big tour? Who's across all the finances?
Well, back when we were really touring, we had managers who took care of all that. We had great managers. And to be honest, my role was just to write music and try not stress out. So I wasn't too across it at the time.
That would be so... I've never had that deal.
I had it for a brief period of time. And I wasn't. We weren't really making money. Like the money we made was just going straight back into more shows, more, you know, product. Yeah. So, but yeah. But
they just said, you focus on the creative side and we'll look after the rest.
It's pretty lovely, isn't it?
It would be a dream.
I can tell you my manager, they're from here. You can...
No, I love my manager.
Ethan.
I love my agent.
Theatre.
Ethan's doing a fantastic job and we adore Ethan. Ethan, I'm getting so fat. Ethan, I'm going to die if I don't get nice hotels and a theatre. Ethan, you got to help. Anyway, he's a great guy. He refuses to come on the podcast.
Love it.
It's so... I mean, so much of comedy starting out is putting on your own shows or going on someone else's show or running shows.
Mm.
And I don't really... I think that might be different in the music world where like a bar will have a... How does that... Okay, you start out playing. Where's the first place you're playing in bands around the place?
Do you mean like for me in Port Pirie or like here?
Is it in Pirie? Is it like... Is that your first gigs as a band in Pirie?
Like Heaps Good Friends or my band when I was first starting out to do music.
All right, let's start out with you and your first, you're in an ensemble or an individual with your name on a poster.
Okay, so usually you're young, and which I was a teenager, so I'm playing anywhere. I played at the public pool. I played at school, lunchtime concerts. I played at pubs that would let me play.
Yeah.
Yep.
Younger than being allowed into the pub, but they let you come in and play music?
Yep.
And that's just background stuff?
I've never wanted to be background stuff, but sometimes it's inevitable.
You gotta sometimes do some background stuff. When did you have your first Can you remember it? Like,
My first real gig.
It was like, you're on at 7, you start then, you end then, people are there to see you.
Honestly, that was a gig I did myself in Canada.
Okay.
And that was awesome. I did it in a church hall. There was about 100 people there. I was shaking when I went on stage. Yeah. But it was like really successful and it encouraged me to go on tour with this other musician who also put on his own shows across the across Canada. And yeah.
And there's like a, then when it's plugged into the musician network?
That was probably more when I did started Heaps Good Friends here in Australia.
When you say here, you're in Brisbane for that, Perry or Adelaide, Jason?
Yeah, I was living in Brisbane.
Yeah.
Nick and I were kind of writing music whenever I would come to Adelaide to visit. Our first show was at, I want to say like the Exeter.
Oh, here?
Yeah, yeah. And then our second show was at
Me too. Was my like, first music gig was at the Exeter.
Really?
James McCann Orchestra.
Dude, that's awesome.
No, it didn't go well. I'm not a good musician. But the X is a great room.
Because our band was so warped, our second gig was at Groove in the Moo.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah, and it was all because of Triple J. We like won their Triple J Unearthed competition.
It's huge. Okay.
So
and then you meet all the...
That's where we met the Jungle Giants and then we went on tour with them.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like Triple J people, I mean, I assume within Australia that's quite important.
Unfortunately, it is. It's like good and bad. It's good if it works for you, but then...
But is there like a guy in a polo shirt who comes over at some point and goes, I'll be deciding if you're on the radio now? Did you meet Kingsmill?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
What was that like?
I was very scared. Yeah, he is a presence, but he was lovely, you know, and I don't know, I was interrupting. I went on a like a little tour of Triple J. He was at a stand-up desk doing work, so...
And for a long time, that was the... I mean, it was odd because it kind of died with it. Like, I don't feel like they have the same taste-making power that they did because they don't have the audience that they used to. But while Kingsmill was at the helm, Australian independent music was a dictatorship.
Right.
Am I being unfair?
I don't know enough about it to comment, but it sounds...
From the outside, it looked very important to get Richard Kingsmill's approval, which you seem to have gotten.
Yep.
I know some people who didn't get it.
It sucks when you don't get it and when you work really hard and like even us, like I feel like we were really popular for a big period and then, you know, we would kind of write music and then it just wasn't really, it's like they weren't really interested in it anymore. Maybe it wasn't as good objectively. I don't know. It's so hard to put him.
No, I think there would be a young woman that would interest him every year for 1 year.
Really?
And they would never get to come back. I remember I did this cycle. Hello, Harper. I'm very well. He's a sweet boy. Sweet, sweet, sweet boy. Lisa Mitchell, Meg Washington, Meg Mack, Lord, actually, slightly early. I just remember like every year it would be like, oh, okay.
Interesting.
This is Lisa Mitchell's year.
Yeah, right.
But it's an odd, it's just such a, the music thing is so much bigger than comedy. In terms of like, you know, number of people doing it, number of tickets selling, speed at which people can get big. And it seems much more mysterious. But comedy is such a closed, I mean, there are ladies in it, but it's, you know, the word fraternity is thrown around a great deal.
Yeah.
I don't hear about the music fraternity. I hear about scenes and then like how the money works is like, we all kind of know the same people and we're all doing almost exactly the same job. It seems like such a more diverse thing in the music world and how that much, you know, some people getting ripped off really badly, some people being treated really well. You know, the marketing that like, it was considered really poor form to be a comedian and do online stuff. They're like, those are the online comics.
Right.
And then in COVID, that just was completely on its head.
Yeah.
Now everyone has to do it. But I think about it all the time, what that must be in the music. I do music things, but it's nothing but an offshoot of the comedy.
Right.
I don't really exist in the music world.
I've heard your organ song. I think it's amazing.
Thank you, Organ Out Weaver. That did get Triple J play.
That is so good.
I'm very excited to make a push for that to be on the Hottest 100 this
year. Yes, do it.
I'm coming for you. Luca, get ready. my friend Luca works on. I could never get on Triple J, and I always wanted to be a radio presenter there.
Oh,
it was my dream.
You would be. You should do like a. See if you can do like a guest hour or something.
Way too old. I'm a crusty old man. But now I know all the kids who work there. And some of them like me, and we write to each other, and it's nice. Hello, Dave.
That's awesome.
Conchetta's gone. Hello, Conchetta. Goodbye. Conchetta was doing it for a while. Jordan Barr was on this podcast. We drove to Ballarat together. She had terrible. She was on before me at a festival, and she had this crusty eye. She had terrible. She had to wear sunglasses for her own performance. No. It was very sad. She's a real star. But again, I know all of it. Like, within the music world, there are musicians that I think would know each other, or at least know each other's work, and people have no idea. People don't know anything.
It's because there's just so many musicians. Everyone can do it, and everyone uploads music.
Yes.
From their bedroom, and it's very saturated, and it's hard to find good stuff. A lot of it sounds the same, and it's fatiguing to have to look. So
it's exhausting. And that's why when someone like Anthony Fantano springs up and goes, I'm going to be doing a lot of this work for you, people really flock to it, I think. But there's almost no one. Music curatorial, that's disappeared in a huge way. Who are you in a scene? Would you say there's a scene? Was there a time when you were like all part of a...
I think I was, but I wouldn't have known that I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there were certain bands around Adelaide we'd kind of always end up gigging with, or like all the festival rats we do, like some of the same bands would be on there.
Did you feel in competition with them? Because within comedy, you want to crush people.
That is horrible, and I'm so sorry that you're in that industry. Oh, I did not feel in competition with them. No.
You're all just doing your own thing. You're all hanging out together. But there must be like, I mean, so you met the Jungle Giants and they took you on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like a win, right? Oh,
that was awesome. That was like revolutionary for our career. Yeah.
And is there another opener for those shows?
That'd be fun.
Is it only one opener for the show?
There is another opener. We weren't the main opener, but we were their first opener. But even with that, there was like a lot of people in the room. We played like incredible venues. And
there's got to be politics in there. Here in comedy, huge politics to who goes on first.
Yeah,
in America,
well,
if someone asks you to MC and they feel they outrank the feature,
right?
Who comes on second?
Yeah, yeah. But don't you think that
so disrespectful?
The final act should be the whoever's headlining. Is there not like a headliner?
The final act will be the headliner, but the first to feature MC, and then coming and doing a spot would be the lowest one of all, or the highest one where you're so much above the show that you would have to go after the headliner. Oh no. Oh no, it's all hierarchy. It's all hierarchy. It's insane.
Man.
Especially in America. In Australia, it's much more, we skip it by not helping each other and just not having openness. You go to see Tom Gleason's going to be walking out onto that stage just about, you know.
Man.
There's no struggle. But I wonder, music seems like such a different world.
I would say that music scene in Adelaide is very lovely. Everyone is super generous and giving. Like, I obviously didn't travel with any of my music gear, and I borrowed like four different instrument pedal objects from like different musicians, and people are keen to help out.
There was there was a sound that was coming out of Adelaide for a time of like this like detuned guitar. I don't know, like Bad Dreams was
I saw them in England when I lived there.
They seem to have done very well. But I always felt like they were poo-pooed by the hipsters for like they were doing the term Bogan blackface was thrown around quite a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Because one of them was a cranial facial surgeon or something. They're like, and then they put on their flannelette and they have their West End view. I was in the real hipstery. Man, when I was at uni, there was a scene I saw with all these musicians and not one good song. I say it with love and respect. Not one of these guys had a single. Ever, except for the Honey Pies, who are...
I haven't heard of them.
This is what they were my favourite Adelaide. And I remember, as John Marco was lead singer and he wrote the songs, and I remember running around and being like, this guy's fucking great, to all the people in the music. I was like, because I heard him on Triple J Unearthed.
Oh, sick.
It's like, they're in Adelaide and they've got a great song. And I was running around all these people going, do you all know this man? And they're like, yes, we know John. Some of the guitar is a little overwrought or something. Just being like, I was sort of existentially horrified by like, there's like one guy who's writing great songs of all of you, and you're not all just getting around him.
Yeah, right.
Because there must be like, there's a lot of people hanging out who, I mean, you write great songs.
Thanks, James.
You're welcome. But you must know a lot of people who don't write great songs.
I do. Yeah, most of the people I know.
Most people who are songwriters and in the scene and hanging out.
Maybe a better way to say it is just songs I don't like. I'm pretty hard to please. I don't know.
No, I think... I'll grant it. That's a very politique thing to say and I'll accept it. But there's something about... I don't know. Yeah, it's odd that the music industry feels more broken than the comedy industry. Certainly like band music, like bands getting together. It feels more broken. If there was... How do you... Other than someone saying, hey, this is a great song, listen to this, how do you find it?
I don't know. People stumble upon songs these days.
Yes.
It's all on social media. It's gross to talk about, but yeah, they'll just be bored scrolling and there's a song.
It's happened to me.
Yeah, trial reels. Have you been trial reeling?
I do not trial reel.
Okay.
At the moment, I don't reel because I just do this. I'm doing long form content.
Yeah, it's a very, very long reel.
This movie, I'm thinking about it as a long YouTube video. As Sick. A long and expensive YouTube video.
Amazing.
Well, maybe people won't like it and I'm scared of that. It's hard to do. The joy about doing a little thing is if it fails, no one cares.
Yeah.
If you do a big thing and it fails, it really hurts.
Hey, that's awesome. You're doing it though. Please. Doing it scared, you know.
Well, since we've spoken, you've got another album as well. Since I was going to have you on to promote the first one.
I have. I wrote an album and I didn't think it was good enough, so I'm writing another one. But
you just scrapped the album?
No, some of the songs are great. Some of the songs need more improvement and then I just need more songs in general.
Okay.
But I'm releasing a song this Friday.
All right.
Yeah, which will be out before this comes out, which is fine. I don't care.
Okay.
But
what's out now? Give it a plug.
Yeah, it's called Band-Aid on a Bullet Wound.
What's it about? Other than getting shot. I assume that's a metaphor.
It's about...
It's not about a mediocre healthcare worker.
It's about... it's about a personal experience I had. No. It's about lots of things, but it was mainly sparked by how I don't know how to deal with homeless people. And I worked in the city...
Look at us circling around back to what we were before. Yeah.
I used to be like really enthusiastic about buying them food, giving them money. But then I just started really to feel like taken advantage of. So I kind of just started ignoring them.
Yeah.
And then I was with a nun who like just loved up this homeless man without giving any money or, you know, food, just because she didn't have anything on her. We were walking by and I was just really impressed with how she'd handled it. And I was like, just realized I'd kind of been lying to myself a bit, just kind of been like, oh, they take advantage of me, so I'm not going to.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, maybe there's a third option. Like, yeah.
It's so hard that like radical acts of love is like the only answer. Because I had this. I went to a shop in America. So these fucking people asking you for money, give them money. You have a number of bad experiences and conversations.
Yeah,
and you get as cold. And I remember the Americans around me going like, "You'll be getting over this. We've seen this before.
Yeah,
we've seen people come here and feel this way about the homeless.
Yes,
trust me, you're going to get over it." And then. I mean, it's hard because there's people in my life who are not homeless, but like a drug addicted or, there are personality disorders or whatever. And it's like, how much can I give of myself to you and welcome you into my life?
With a family of four.
You got a family.
Yeah.
It makes it so much harder to, like, again, with the home, like a friend of mine used to, he invited homeless people in to come and live with him.
That's wild.
Like in his hotel room or whatever. It's beautiful, but I think it would be imprudent for me to do that into my home with my family. But you go, what is the... Well, I look forward to hearing the song and having it help me towards that. We got that's a good podcast. That's a good sized podcast. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You got a baby sleeping in the car?
Yeah.
What else do you want to... Oh, sorry.
I said she's probably waking up anytime soon. So,
what else do you want to plug? Plug the last album that we didn't get to plug.
Well, yeah, you can do that. You can just look me up online. Emma Frad, the last album.
You're still going by Frad?
Frad has kind of become my stage name because I just did so many gigs as Emma Frad before I got married. Yeah. I didn't want to change my name and like lose a bunch of fans. So it's my maiden and my stage name. But my real name is Emma Cruz.
I was going to ask.
And I do love my husband before you...
No.
She didn't take her husband's name.
I didn't question it. I didn't question it. But I'm going to try and make it over to Margot's afterwards and hopefully have it. Have you played these escape rooms in a box?
I have never. It's like Exit. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I've never, but I'm keen.
You know about them, though. You knew that immediately.
Yep, I did.
I have one at my house. If I can make it work.
Awesome.
I'm really pleased by them. I think the Blanches came and stayed with you at one point.
Yeah.
Am I getting this right? And you played Catan?
Yes.
They felt very guilty about not having the room to put you up. They showed me the room they were thinking of putting the four of you up.
Oh, tonight. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't care. We haggled down our Airbnb woman.
You can do that?
Yep. $550 a night's too much. How about $400?
Because she accepted this.
She did, yeah.
I don't know how to feel about that.
Although there is only one bin bag, and she said, because people steal them, so you'll have to find your own for the rest of the week, which that's taken away from your 5 stars. So,
look, as we move on from the homeless conversation, let me tell you this. I would love to get the sweet money. I think sweets, where there's a kitchen and several bedrooms. I'd yearn to travel with the family in a suite. I believe in the suite. I'm heading. God wants me when I listen quietly at night. I think he's not opposed to my family. Not for me. But for my family being in a suite.
One day.
We'll all hang in there. Come and meet the rest of the film crew. They've shown up.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, James.
Ever thought about Botox but worried you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural, because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.